Welcome back to the Angletopia podcast, the podcast for people who love British travel, history, and culture. I'm your host, Jonathan Thomas, and today we're stepping behind the velvet ropes of one of Britain's most magnificent stately homes with Carmen Alvarez, Collections and Conservation Manager at Blenheim Palace. Carmen oversees the preservation of extraordinary treasure spanning centuries, from fine furnishings to delicate Spencer Churchill gowns that haven't been displayed for 20 years. What makes her story particularly compelling is her journey up through the ranks at Blenheim, from welcome team supervisor to her current role managing one of Britain's most significant heritage collections. Today, we're exploring two exciting new experiences that she helped create, the new Ladies of Blenheim exhibition, showcasing rare fashions worn at historic weddings and coronations, and the intimate Meet the Collections team talks, giving visitors unprecedented access to hidden palace treasures. Whether you've ever wondered how you preserve a centuries-old tapestry or what it takes to care for artifacts at a UNESCO World Heritage Site, you're about to discover the fascinating world of heritage conservation at Blenheim Palace. Welcome, Carmen.
Thank you so much for having me today.
So thank you for being here. We really appreciate it. Thank you for making time from the busy palace. And So, first, let's talk about this new exhibition, because when I got the press release in my inbox, I was like, we've got to have somebody to talk about this, because this is going to be really interesting. So first, please give us some background on Blenheim Palace and what makes it so important for visitors.
Well, Blenheim Palace, apart from everyone, I think, knows Blenheim Palace internationally for being the birthplace of Sir Winston Churchill, of course, but going way back before that, it was a present from Queen Anne to the first Duke and Duchess of Marlborough, who gifted the land and the funds to build Blenheim Palace. So it's a very special and unique Baroque building that is, it must be highlighted always as one of the best Baroque samples in the country and in Europe, I would say, British Baroque, and World Heritage Site since 1987. So it's definitely a witness of history and the past of the Spencer Churchill family.
So the history about Blenheim is oftentimes focused on the great men, you know, John Churchill and Winston Churchill. So what inspired this concept for the Ladies of Blenheim exhibition, and how did you decide which pieces to include after being so long in storage?
Well, we made a selection mainly from Consuelo Vanderbilt's time, the ninth Duchess of Marlborough. But of course, the family had remarkable women all the way back from the first Duchess of Marlborough, Sarah. But of course, we wanted to present something. We know that our guests do love fashion. We did an amazing exhibition last year called Icons of British Fashion. So we know and we knew from that time that our guests do love a display around fashion. So we chose to do something from more related to the history of the palace and the family, highlighting these fashion moments and a special history events around these women, rather if weddings or coronations or just special outfits that can highlight the character of these special women.
So, well, please tell us about these fascinating women who are featured in the exhibition and why it's important to tell their stories.
Well, I think we wanted to do it mainly because some of these women are very important for the history of Blenheim. So one of the reasons that I wanted to do it is because I did come across Lady Henrietta Spencer Churchill, the daughter of the 11th Duke of Marlborough and sister of the current Duke of Marlborough. She is a wonderful historian. Nothing knows the palace and the history better than she does. And I came across her wedding dress in one of the cupboards in the palace. So I asked her if she wouldn't ever mind if I could display her wedding dress. And she said, of course not. I started building the display around that, and then just trying to go through the archives and see what we could find and display that could be interesting, or items that haven't been seen for a while and we can tell the story of her or Consuelo Vanderbilt and the 10th Duchess, or the future 13th Duchess of Marlborough, Lady Camilla Blandford, which is another item that we have on display, her wedding dress and her evening gown and the morning after. So it's, I think, we try to do something for every public, every taste, basically.
So can you tell us about what was the most challenging piece to kind of take out of storage and conserve for this exhibition? And what special measures do you have to take to display it for the public?
So I would say there are two very special garments in this display. One was the coronation gown worn by Consuelo Vanderbilt for the coronation of King George the Fifth in 1911, but actually was reused by the 10th Duchess Mary for both coronation of George the Sixth and Queen Elizabeth in 1953. And one of the reasons that was reused is because of after the war, country was coming out the close rationing. And so she didn't want to spend too much money on new garments and, you know, everything around it. So she decided to repurpose and reuse what was worn by Consuelo Vanderbilt in 1911 and worn twice, both the robes as well as the dress. So it's very delicate, this one, because all the brocade and embellishments have been they're basically in some areas holding by a thread. So we had to reinstate them. We had the textile conservator having a look and then temporarily just reattach them to make sure that we could display it safely. And the other one is the coronation, the maid of honor gown worn by Lady Rosemary Spencer Churchill as a maid of honor for Elizabeth II in 1953, which the silk launched. It was just in such a delicate condition. It was conserved for another exhibition, but we wanted to display because our guests loved it. So in terms of how we make sure that they are displayed safely and without causing any further damage, it's just making sure that the environmental conditions are the right ones. So from the light levels, constant pest control and pest monitoring, and just using the right mannequins, making sure that there's not tension or any pressure on the fabric or any part of the garment, really. And also, of course, we are very much, we believe in displaying or making, creating exhibitions that are accessible for the public from a preservation point of view. So they are not inside display cases, which I think make them more special, which put more pressure on the collections and conservation team, because we need to be more every day, more on top of making sure that nothing is going wrong in, around the garments.
That's interesting that they're not in cases.
They're not. They're in the rooms. Yeah.
Yeah. Because how do you manage all of the elements to make the temperature and light perfect in the room in a 300-year-old palace?
Oh, it is a challenge, let me tell you. Something that I learned working in an historic house, and this is something that I'm sure any colleague, if you ever interview another colleague from another historic house, this is something that we know. We will never be a museum. We are a lived-in space. So as much as you want to control the environmental levels, like the temperature, humidity, the light levels. When it's hot, we need to open windows. And, you know, it's just light levels are very difficult to control because we don't have spotlights and, you know, how you will do in a exhibition room. So it's a challenge. Half of the palace, the humidity is very dry. The other half is very high. And, you know, it's very difficult to find the happy medium, but it's hard work, but it's worth it because we are part of preserving this heritage. So it pays off.
So which part of the palace is this exhibition located in?
So we have displayed them in within the rooms and the state rooms. So they have
Lovely.
A beautiful frame, basically.
Yeah. I mean, I've been there several times, so I can visualize it. It's that sounds lovely because at least they're not like, you know, in the carriage house.
No. It's we decided we. originally the idea was to display them in the library, but we also, as you know, if you've been to Blenheim, we also host many events, and we always need to give out the space. So, but it's fine because they, as I say, they offer the room, each room offers a different frame for each garment, which makes it even more special. And actually, we also display them in rooms where the garment could be related to a portrait in the background or a photograph that is on a table. So it makes more sense, and actually it gives more meaning to the piece.
Man, you're making me want to get on an airplane and come look at this exhibition. So as you were putting together this exhibition and gathering these dresses, which Spencer Churchill woman's story surprised you the most during your research, and which item best represents her legacy?
Oh, so this is a very difficult question because all of them, you know, deserve to be highlighted. But I would say that I really admired 10th Duchess Mary. She, to the point that we wanted to only display garments like for very special events like weddings and things like that, but I ended up displaying her Red Cross and ATS garments and riding attires as well, because she's so fascinating. She was a long-term supporter of the Red Cross, and she was a member of its executive committee as well. She traveled around the world, represented the charity, and she was the president of the Oxfordshire branch as well. So she was very much involved with the local during war times as well. And it's funny because her husband used to, wrote that she was a female general while he was only a captain. And I think that's represent her character. She was very much involved with the family, with the locals, community, with the charity. She was a strong, admirable woman for sure.
Fascinating. So I'm curious, and this kind of goes into my next question. I know Blenheim is currently undergoing a conservation program for the building itself right now. So how do you protect the garments from construction dust and noise and all that?
So actually, the garments are, so we got a scaffolding in the north and south facade. The majority of the work has happened on the roof. So we have displayed the garments in the staterooms and drawing rooms. So they are away from all that. Dust, even, let me tell you, even if we wouldn't have a roof project going on, the dust levels will always be there. Because as I say, we open the door widely for everyone to come in, and even people bring dust in as just something normal. But we are lucky to have a wonderful conservation cleaning team that every morning does the checks, and the collections team as well. And then we're just on it to make sure that everything, not only the garments, because in the end we've got the tapestries, the carpets, the furniture. So everything is safe for another day.
So did you have to do anything special to conserve these items so they could be on display for 3 months? Is there any special precautions, or because it, you know, that's like you said, there's a lot of people walking through these rooms and they're bringing in mud from the estate. They're bringing in, you know, children, but children are dirty, as we know.
No, they are. Of course, they are behind ropes. So even if they are exposed and we are not putting them behind a glass, they are behind ropes, so they are not reachable, if you know what I mean. But they are just displayed with the rest of the objects in the room, but they are safe. So the apart from the rope, as I say, we just make sure that we are constantly checking the garments. If we notice anything, a threat or anything that it could be out of place, we will put, even if we have to remove it, we will remove it. We wouldn't have never display anything that we could compromise, or the conservation or condition can be compromised. We will never do that. That's why actually they've been pieces. Lady Rosemary's Maid of Honor dress, for example, wasn't displayed for many, many, many years because it was in such poor condition. So since it has been conserved, now lives already on its own mannequin. So we don't even handle the dress anymore. So it's padded and it's done in a specific way that we only need to handle the mannequin without having to touch the fabric, if that makes sense. So, and then it has its own tray and hot padding system and packing system when we have it in the storage. So, and I put hundreds of do not touch signs around it so no one gets any near it. But yeah, so that's how we do it. Normally people say that the best way of conserving things is having the angry Spaniard shouting at people. So maybe that helps as well.
I love it. And it's not like there's not people in the rooms monitoring everything anyway. So it's not like
everything's unprotected. Yes, yeah. And CCTV cameras, all that from security point of view. We have all that covered.
Steal the golden toilets, right?
Well, let's don't go in there. Let's go on that. This is another podcast.
So moving on to the other new experience that you guys had. I've visited Blenheim several times, and I've done a behind the scenes tour, which was one of my favorite experiences. So this new thing sounds amazing. So can you tell us what the new Meet the Collections experience is all about and what it kind of entails for visitors?
So this is something completely new that we haven't done before. We realized for the last few years that we've been doing our deep clean. The put the house to bed used to be the spring clean in some of the historic houses. That these used to be done while we were close to the public, but for the last, don't know, now 8 years, I think, we've been doing it open to the public. So while we do the cleaning, we get so many questions and we get people approach us and ask about anything and everything. So for this summer, as you know, and you mentioned the roof project, we've been trying to offer as much as we can to just share with everyone that even if we have a scaffolding, it's worth coming to see Blenheim Palace because we have so much to offer. And one of the things I thought, you know, we are a very small team, collections team, but what if we try with the weekends first, we pick up our favorite objects or objects that haven't been on show or you cannot see very well if they're at the back of the room, bring them forward, or let's position ourselves in a room and let's meet and greet our guests. And if they have any questions about a specific object or, you know, whatever we're highlighting, the ball furniture, a tapestry or anything, or normally they just want to know how we look after the place or any, you know, interesting aspects of our job. So that's what we're doing. We just answering all those questions and making sure that they have a great time and they learn about the collection because in the end, that's what we're there for.
Right. And so how have those gone so far this summer since they started?
It's actually gone really well. I would say that people are more interested in, as I say, more than the object that we're trying to highlight. They want to know many other things that sometimes, history as well. Sometimes it's just the golden toilet. Sometimes all the things. But it's great because anything that they ask, if we can answer the question, we will do it. And yeah, so we're there to educate and share the history of Blenheim. So
there's been some recent work on the famous tapestries. Can you tell us about how those were conserved and are they back on display now?
Yes. Yeah, so over 20 years ago, I think it was a rotation of a conservation that started for the collection of Blenheim, the collection of tapestries. So normally every year, one tapestry from the public side and one tapestry from the private side go for conservation. Before Brexit, they used to go back to Brussels after being check all the lining at the back and removing all the poppers or the nails because it used to be nailed to the wall. So after that work was done, they were sent to Brussels to be cleaned. After Brexit, we're no longer allowed, not us, anyone, to send artworks outside the country. So we're quite lucky. We have our textile conservator, Emma Tilford, who built kind of a pool at the back of her workshop to be able to also wash our tapestries. So she does absolutely everything from reinstating threads from the deep cleans and removing the lining and just removing any oxidization from from nails and relining them, adding Velcro, because this is the most important thing as well that we do. And the way that we are reattaching the tapestry or rehanging the tapestries is with Velcro, with a new Velcro system that has also a pulling system. So in case of a fire or in case of having to salvage the tapestries, we can just pull but more than one person, because otherwise that thing will kill you. Yeah.
they're pretty big.
They're very big. But it's a way of conserving the tapestries for a long term. But something very special is that last month we welcomed the very last tapestry, the Lille tapestry from the campaign tapestries of the first Duke of Marlborough. The last one from the public side came back from conservation. So we have one more that is currently being conserved from the private side. And then after that, one more. And then the whole set of tapestries, of the collections of tapestry, will be conserved for the future. So it's a huge achievement. And I can't actually put that on me, because obviously the previous person in charge, Kate Ballinger, was the one that was overseeing all this.
Well, I got to come back and see, because when I was there a couple of years ago, their tapestries were gone. So some of them were gone.
So now they're back. Yeah. The public side, all of them are now back. And unless hopefully nothing wrong happens, now that we don't use fireplaces, candle lights and things like that, there is no that immediate damage. All the light levels are controlled, UV, all these through the windows is now controlled. So, and we are on top of dust levels, so we shouldn't have to wash the tapestries anytime soon. There's a rotation always, depending front, back, every 20 years, whatever. Hopefully we don't have to do it for another few years.
Time to wash the tapestries.
Well, not me. No.
So moving on from that, let's talk about you. How did you start at Blenheim Palace and end up where you are now?
Well,
it sounds amazing.
Well, as an art historian, I came after uni, masters, and working in the industry back in Spain. When I moved to England, I moved to improve my English because I wanted to go back to my country, being able to speak the language. And then I ended up going to a recruitment morning. They used to do that in Blenheim Palace. I was working at the Ashmolean Museum back there in Oxford. As a room guide, trying to improve my English and trying to make my way up. And I went for that recruitment morning at Blenheim, and I ended up getting a job as a welcome team leader, then supervisor, which was more related to customer service, the booking of the guided tours and things like that. And then I got the chance to start doing a few days here and there with the person in charge of the conservation and collection, who was Kate Ballinger, Keeper of Palace and Collection, which I love the title. And then she gave me the opportunity, and I just worked alongside her for 9 years as her deputy. And then when she decided to move on, I was lucky enough to be offered the new position as a collections and conservation manager.
So how did your transition from the deputy to the head change your perspective on Blenheim's collection?
I was very lucky that Kate... I was very lucky that Kate actually kept me involved from the start in so many things. So I was familiar with several responsibilities, and she always allowed me to be creative and just to learn and make my own ways and do things. So when she went, of course, I have gained way more responsibility, and I received many more emails than I've ever done in my life. But I was already familiar with the collection, as I say, in high level because of her. She allowed me to be that much involved. So the transition has been interesting, challenging, but at the same time, I'm very grateful, and I hasn't been, you know, that shock or surprise so far.
Well, good. So in the macro, what's the most unexpected discovery you've made about an object at Blenheim's collection during your time there?
There are a few, to be honest, because Unfortunately, there are so many unknowns related to the collection. Because the documentation around the collection, the majority of it, up to the fourth duke, towards the end of 18th century, all those documents were sent to the British Library. So we don't have that easy access to them to be able to research, you know, around that. Having to discover sometimes removing very large portraits that I never thought in my life that I will be able to see up close, or because they're very high level or whatever, removing them, discovering at the back that different labels they in the past they went to different exhibitions around Europe, or for example, one of the things that I hope to be remembered by is finding, going back to the Ladies of Blenheim display, finding in storage Lady Rosemary's dress for the coronation of Elizabeth II. Because I remember when I first started going to catalogue some clothing in the private side, and I was told, oh, see if you can find the dress. No one can find it. And I didn't find it that time. But years after, when I was with Lady Henrietta doing some organisation in their room, I remember seeing something that was similar to what everyone was looking for. And then when we put together another exhibition, I realised, hang on a minute, I'm going to go back. Yes, it was the dress. And funny enough, everyone thought it was lost, but it was in there all along. So everyone was picturing it white. And because, of course, the silk with the time and sand damage, light damage and everything has turned that ivory color that it was. It turned like very yellow. So, and it was labeled party dress. So when people was open the bag, always thought there was a different dress. So I found the lost dress. So for me, that is something that I hope to be remembered by.
I love it. So can you describe what a typical day in your life is like as managing conservation and all these objects and in such a wonderful place? What's the day in a life like for you?
So in the morning, first thing is after security, up at the palace, just walking through, catching up with the rest of the collections team, or walking all together, making sure that everything is fine. There is no, sometimes, you know, in 300-year-old buildings, you can find water coming through where you don't want to come through. That's where we're doing the roof project. Just making sure that nothing has happened, everything is in place, checking the humidifiers, going through the list of things to do with the team, and then answering plenty of emails and working on different projects, which is the upgrade in the condition reporting or the catalogue or upcoming exhibitions, future exhibitions. And it's just a little bit of everything. And because the collections team is part of the operations team, we also work alongside my colleagues from events or guest services. So we work very close together, so we support each other. So if I need to move a piano, for example, they will come and help me. And if they, you know, need me to step in to cover a room because they're short, we will always do that. So we are very much involved from the operational point of view as well.
Fascinating. My favorite genre of British TV show is the fly on the wall documentaries behind the scenes of all these stately homes, and I have seen the recent Blenheim one. So
okay.
I'm curious though. You know, when the house closes for visitors, what's it like in this great house? Like, what happens when the visitors leave?
The first thing, hoovering.
Yeah.
To be 100% honest, this is so important, actually. The guides, the guiding team at Blenheim, they're so wonderful. They're not only knowledgeable, but also they are the ones that when we close the front door, they grab the hoovers and they hoover the whole palace. And this is key to protect the collection, actually. And
I say this,
yeah, a lot of red carpet. And so this is very important. And then more checking to make sure that nothing has got damaged during the day. And then just start putting the house to bed until the following day. So that's basically...
Now, Blenheim is still very much a family home. Does, like, the family use the rest of the house when the visitors leave, or do they kind of just leave it as the museum that it kind of is now?
No, it's been for many, many years now. What is, as I say, which is distinguished between public and private side. So
Right.
they have their own quarters, and then we have our public side. Although very especially now, we have opened during the roof project, we have opened some extra rooms in the private side as part of the general tour, the family treasures, we call it. So you can see some extra rooms, very special ones actually. So yeah, but normally those are very private. So that's why what we offer now is a very unique experience. It's only happening until the scaffolding comes down, basically.
Stop making me want to come.
I'm
God.
so sorry.
So let's see. Okay. So now this year is actually a milestone year for Blenheim. It's you guys are celebrating 75 years of public access. So how has approach to conservation and public engagement changed over that period of time? Because I know when palaces were like this were opened in the mid 20th century, it was like I kind of out of desperation to kind of save these places. But now these places are worldwide renowned and they're massive tourist attractions and operations. So what has changed between then and now?
So much. Funny enough, one of the reasons that the palace was opened to begin with was also to gain funds to repair some roof problems.
The
So that's why this is very interesting, but also all the things, because of course, maintaining a 300-year-old building, you know, it's a difficult responsibility to deal with. So everything has changed so much. So from the number of staff that works and looks after the palace, from the gardeners, the team has grown compared to how it used to be before. The park farm. We now have, of course, more events. Well, the guest service experience, of course, we're definitely now a proper tourist attraction compared to, you know, 75 years ago. But in terms of conservation, has changed so much because it used to be more like, well, let's call this group of people from the grounds or here to help us move this table or help us. So it's been an educational journey, not only for us at Blenheim, I bet any historic house. Journey, the how to do things right from conservation perspective, using gloves, using not harsh chemicals to do, to clean, to polish, to do, you know. So it has been a long, long way, protecting the light levels from the windows. So all the donations that we get when our guests purchase the tickets, they really are invested in preserving the place for future generations. And I think that is something that we feel very proud to be part of. And we also, at the same time, very, very thankful to be able to do this thanks to the tickets and that our guests purchase and the donations that they make to as a charity, as you know, Blenheim Palace Heritage Foundation. Yes, so it has changed quite a lot. From every angle, but I would say something that remains special and the same is that this is still a family home. So, yeah.
So, that's an interesting shift because, 100 years ago, Blenheim would have employed hundreds of people to serve the family and make the house run. And now there's hundreds of people employed to basically save and preserve the house and make it accessible for everyone. So that's quite a shift in purpose, and I love it.
Yes.
So, what makes Blenheim's collection unique among Britain's greater historic houses? The Chatsworths, the Buckingham Palaces. What are some lesser known treasures that visitors might not expect to see?
I mean, that's a very difficult question, actually, because of course, if compared to other historic houses, they have amazing collections and, you know,
Yeah.
the stories behind it and general history. But for us, it's the home of the Churchill and the Spencer Churchill family. I think that is something huge. The family has been a huge part, an important part of the history of this nation. So I would say that being able to witness where different family members and how they looked and still look after the palace and this heritage, I think it makes it unique. And in terms of items, their items that were made or purchased, especially for the place, for the palace, you won't be able to find anywhere in unique, like from the tapestries that were just purchased to decorate or ornate the palace walls, to furniture or carving, stone carving from Grinling Gibbons, which is something very unique. So it's just, it's full of details. Next year actually is the 300 years anniversary of the death of Sir John Bamborough, the architect of Blenheim Palace. We're looking into creating a very special exhibition around this subject. But of course, Blenheim Palace was one of his creations, unique creations. So it just has so much to offer, and the grounds, capability grounds. So definitely for me as an art historian, a must see.
For me, I mean, it's a microcosm of Englishness, and it's a, you know, it's a fusion of great architecture, great works of art, great history, great landscape design. And it's like, you could spend a week there and still discover new amazing things to see.
This is exactly that why it was given in 1987 the World Heritage Site title, because it has, as you said, you have described exactly all the aspects that this wonderful place has.
So you mentioned the Churchill connections, and forgive me for asking a Winston Churchill question, because it's going to go great on social media. So what are some things for people to see related to Winston Churchill? Because I know most people know he was born there, but he spent a lot of his life there. So what are some things that a Churchillian would want to see while visiting?
No, he loved Blenheim Palace. He said that he made the two best decisions of his life at Blenheim, which one to be born and the other one to marry, because he proposed claiming his wife at the Temple of Diana at Blenheim Palace. So you can see the room where he was born. You can see the Temple of Diana in the grounds. But also we have two very special, one exhibition, a special display, the display of his own paintings as well in the bathroom. Which they are kindly on loan from different members of the family as well, and which is very lucky to have them there. But we, in 2020, we put together a very special exhibition downstairs, just off to the undercroft of the palace, which is included in the general ticket. And what it makes it special is all around Winston Churchill, but it's all around Winston Churchill and his life related to Blenheim Palace, because you can learn about Winston, as you know. So Winston Churchill in London, you know, that you go to wonderful places. You can go to Chatwell. If no one has been there, recommended, a wonderful property and beautiful things to see around his figure. But I would say that our uniqueness is that relationship that he had as a member of the family with the place, with his grandfather, the 7th Duke of Marlborough, uncle, the 8th, and cousin, the 9th Duke of Marlborough, and a special relationship that he had with the American 9th Duchess Consuela Vanderbilt. Because as we know, his mom, Jenny Jerome, was also American. So he had wonderful stories there, speeches. And so it's all we wanted to do with that exhibition is highlight that connection and his life at Blenheim Palace, the place that he really loved. So if anyone wants to come and learn about that aspect, we definitely have the place to do so.
And I did see that exhibition when I visited a couple of years ago, and I can highly recommend it. It's worth visiting for Churchillians. So
that's great.
Definitely take a look. It's lots of great artifacts, and I was very happy when I left.
Oh, so great! Thank you so much.
So, what you mentioned that it's a UNESCO World Heritage Site. So, what does that mean for a place like Blenheim? Does that bring extra visitors or extra conservation work, or what does that mean?
Yes and no. I mean, if you're a fan of World Heritage Sites and you make a list to complete them all, maybe yes. But yeah. No, it means that we are, we tick all the boxes. You know, as you mentioned earlier, we have all these wonderful things to see inside, outside the building. And from conservation perspective, either of you are World Heritage Site or not, we have a responsibility regardless, because I'm a believer that heritage does not belong to one single person or a group of people. Heritage is something that is witness of the past, of the history of a group, a nation, you know. So for me, it's something that if we are in this business. We have the responsibility. We are custodians of it, so we definitely need to conserve it regardless. That's why the business is operating as it operates, with all the events that we have and everything that we do, to be able to maintain this place with a roof, with, you know, a bridge, with the gardens as they are. So the responsibility is there regardless you're a World Heritage Site or not.
So let's talk about the roof project. Now, what exactly are they doing? Because are they just like doing spot repairs, or are they replacing the whole roof? Or
that I'm not the right person to talk about every single detail, because my colleagues from the Build Heritage are the ones managing it, and they're doing a fantastic job. But basically, there were so many wrong repairs throughout history that all holes, and we had water coming through in a very bad way from the beams. So basically, they are just repairing and redoing the parts of the roof that were actually in pretty poor condition. It's incredible sometimes when I went up there between the Thornhill painting and the actual roof. There is a room of beams. I don't know how to describe it, but I remember going there. I went there twice and I was shocked, because you walk into the building and you think, oh my God, this place is incredible. It's so well preserved. And you think, you know, all this money and whatever, but you would never know how many buckets were holding the leaks, the water filtrations coming from the actual roof. And the problem is when it snowed, or when you'd never know if you were going to have a swimming pool in the Great Hall, which is a high risk. And that's why my colleagues from Build Heritage have gone through, you know, everything to be able to prove that, and we knew, and our senior management and trustees knew, and they've been supporting absolutely everything all the way. But of course, it wasn't a cheap thing to do.
No.
As you can imagine, it's nearly £12 million. And so, but it needs to be done. As we said, we are here doing that, and with the support of our trustees and senior management and the whole Blenheim team and our guests, this is a huge effort from everyone that loves and respects Blenheim Palace. So we appreciate it.
So how long is it expected to take?
So I think scaffolding will start coming down next year. So obviously it's not a 6 month project. Just the building of the scaffolding alone and taking it down is just probably a half year. But we also very lucky that we work with great contractors. They're doing a fantastic job. Yes, next year, next summer, I think hopefully things will start coming down. The front and back of the palace, the scaffolding will come down earlier. But then we have the internal scaffolding for the wall paintings, Thornhill and Rue Laguerre, which they also been conserved. And I cannot wait to see that.
Well, and I would encourage people to visit anyway, despite there being scaffolding, because early in my travel days, I used to be really disappointed when scaffolding was up. I was like, oh, it's going to ruin the pictures. But now that I know what goes into heritage and conservation, it's like the scaffolding's a good thing, because it's saving these things for generations to come.
You're just witnessing. Yeah. And actually, you can have an idea how the palace was built because of that. And one thing that we're doing just to make worth it having the scaffolding is the rooftop experience. So now, as a guest, with your ticket, not paying anything extra, you can go all the way up, and there is a platform where you can see the north side and all the details on the rooftop and the work taking place, so you can actually be a little bit more involved in what is going on at the moment. So
that's really cool. That's really cool that you guys did that, because seeing the heritage in action, you know, it's fascinating, because it's, you know, I come from a country where nothing is old, so it's, you know, if something needs to be fixed, you knock it down and build a new one. You can't do that on a 300-year-old UNESCO World Heritage Site.
To be honest, I come from a country that even all things or antiques, too many years back, they also used to tear them down. So
yeah, not good. So for my final question, looking ahead, and you mentioned the Vanborough 300th anniversary of his death, what other exciting discoveries or projects are coming up for Blenheim Palace for the public in the coming years?
So we are looking into different projects at the moment. Some of them I cannot say, just in case they don't happen. But the way that we like to take on projects, exhibitions especially, we want to do it in a way that we know our guests are gonna enjoy. So we love to be accurate and historically accurate always, and that's important, but we also need to make sure that we do that in a way that is going to reach as many guests as possible and they're going to enjoy the journeys. We, as you say, we got Bamboo 300. We're trying to look into different kind of maybe more immersive, more, we'll see, but we are looking into different options, how to share the history of Blenheim in different ways. Rather than a printed board, let's do it in a different way. We can have the printed board because we also love to be accessible for everyone, but how can we do all this in a very effective way? So just stay tuned, basically.
Making it more theatrical, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I spoke to the woman who curates at Jane Austen's house. She had a theater background and mentioned
how
they made the visitor experience more theatrical by piping in noise and so making it feel like you just kind of walked in and the people who kind of just left the room.
We love it. It's people love it. We recently opened our Victorian kitchens downstairs. Ooh. And we did that as well. You can walk into the Victorian kitchen and hear the butler, the head of house mates, and you know, and people absolutely love it because again, it's just reachable. It's just more accessible for everyone.
It humanizes it.
Correct.
So, anything related to Winston Churchill coming up that you can hint at?
I don't think at the moment we have anything, but we always, to be honest, we always have new paintings coming in and on loan, and they come and go. We have his traveling easel on loan from Chatwell. It's going back next year. So if you want to see it in the room display, just come and see us. Otherwise, go to Chatwell next year. But we always, Winston Churchill is always a big part of who we are, and we always highlight this. We always highlight this in every possible way we can. Books, manuscripts, anything that we can put on display. So,
well, what a fascinating discussion this has been. Thank you so much for joining us on the Angletopia podcast, Carmen. We will link to Blenheim Palace's website and information on both the Ladies of Blenheim exhibition and the Meet the Collections experience in the show notes. And if you're planning a visit, these new offerings run through August and October, respectively. And if you enjoyed this episode of the Angletopia podcast, please subscribe, like, or comment. And if you like the Angletopia podcast, please consider joining the Friends of Angletopia Club, where you can get early access to new episodes and connect with other Britain enthusiasts and support great long-form writing about Britain. Join us next time as we continue exploring the people, places, and stories that make Britain's cultural heritage so endlessly fascinating to discover. Thank you so much, Carmen.
Thank you so much for having me.